Hello and welcome to Home to Her, the podcast that's dedicated to reclaiming the lost and stolen wisdom of the sacred feminine. I'm your host, Liz Kelly, and on each episode, we explore her stories and myths, her spiritual principles, and most importantly, what this wisdom has to offer us right now. Thanks for being here. Let's get started. Hey, everybody, and welcome to today's show. I am Liz, and I'm joining you as usual from Central Virginia in the United States and from the ancestral lands of the Monacan people with a deep bow of gratitude for their stewardship of this land, which has gone on way longer than I've been here or my ancestors. And before we dive in, I want to share a couple of announcements with you. So first up, I want to know if you have scooped up your tickets to Revelry yet. Revelry is an online, ecstatic, embodied, and global celebration of the harvest and all the abundance of fall that I've been collaborating with the amazing women behind Girl God Books and She on the Tip of Her Tongue on. We've been working on this all year, and we have created a stellar lineup of women who will be leading us in ritual, performing music and drumming, sharing poetry and storytelling. And it's all happening Saturday, September 25th at 3 p.m. Eastern time. So you can reserve your spot at revelrycelebrations.com, and I will be sure to put a link in the show notes where you can go and check it out. And I hope you will consider joining me for the upcoming 12-week course, The Call of the Wild Feminine, which is being hosted by the social change platform Advaya. So this course kicks off on September 28th, and I'm going to be teaching the very first week when we'll be grounding into who and what the sacred feminine really is. You can learn more and sign up at my website, hometoher.com, or at wildfeminine.co. And listen up, if you sign up, you are eligible for a 20% off discount. Use the code HOMETOHER20, and I'll put that in the show notes too. And one last thing, for those who are paying attention, before the last episode, I mentioned that I'm working on creating a community that's outside of social media for those of us who want to go a little deeper into the world and the wisdom of the sacred feminine. And I think I even said it's coming this month, as in September. Yeah, well, I'm still working on it. What can I say? So stay tuned. And in the meantime, if you're on Facebook, come on over and join me and a whole lot of other people in the Home to Her group where we are discussing this topic of the sacred feminine every day. And with that, we're ready to get going. So I want to tell you that today's episode is going to be a little different. Typically, and you know this if you've been listening, I invite on a guest who's embodying the wisdom of the sacred feminine in a variety of ways, whether that's through a book they've written or their art or music or a coaching program. But there's always this active question that I'm holding close to my heart, and that's about the practical application of this wisdom. How do we, and when I say we, I really mean me, how do I actually show up in the world in different ways, in ways that align with the wisdom and the teachings of the sacred feminine? Well, in the course of planning this upcoming Revelry event that you've heard me talk about, I've kind of gotten a firsthand experience of what it means to work in a more sacred feminine way. And this isn't the first time, but I have to be honest, it's kind of turned some things upside down for me. And I say this because I want to acknowledge really candidly that while I show up here and talk about this, I also know how very hard it can be to shift your mindset and to embrace things like slowing down, rejecting arbitrary deadlines and time-imposed stressors, or embracing the notion of power with others instead of power in a hierarchy, especially in a culture that's telling us at every turn, no, 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 this is the way the world works. So I want to talk about that today. I want to talk today about really embodying some of these lessons from the sacred feminine. And I've invited back two wonderful women who, if you've been a listener for a while, you might've heard them before. And that's Trista Hendren, who is the founder of Girl God Books, and Iris Eve, the creatrix of the social media phenomenon, She on the Tip of Her Tongue. And here's a little refresher on both of them for you. And I want to tell you, if you haven't listened to their episodes before, you really should go back and do that. As the creative force behind Girl God Books, Trista Hendren has published more than 25 books celebrating the multifaceted nature of the divine feminine, including titles for children, several amazing adult anthologies, workbooks, and poetry chapbooks. More recently, she's expanded into offering a series of online courses and workshops, inviting women to journey more deeply into the wisdom of powerful divine feminine figures like Lilith and Medusa. And Trista is joining us today from her home in Norway. And Iris Eve is a poet, singer, songwriter, and curator of She on the Tip of Her Tongue, a production company and popular social media site that amplifies the voices and art of women with more than 120,000 global followers. She's also currently hard at work on her first book of collected poems. And Iris is joining us today from her home in Oregon. So these two women are my inspiration, my co-collaborators, and my friends, and I'm really happy to have them back on the show with me. Welcome, welcome, ladies.
Well, thanks for having us, Liz.
Yeah. Yes, thank you so much. It's been so great working with both of you over, I don't know, the last year plus.
It's been a blast. And so I want to talk about this. I want to talk, and I think, you know, I thought a good place for us to start would be talking about our journeys with work specifically. I know for me, and I did a short episode where I talked about a little bit about my background of how I got into this. And I think I mentioned that I had more of a business background. And so when I got on this divine feminine path, I just, it seemed very clearly that there was no connection between those two things. Like I just couldn't figure out a way to work that felt in alignment with these values that felt so clear to me. So I didn't kind of do anything like that for a little while. And so it's been interesting kind of stepping back into the idea of things that would fall into work for me. Like, you know, this podcast is a blast, but it's also work. Managing online community is really fun for me, but it's also work, and planning an event is certainly work. So it's been a big shift in mindset for me. And I was curious with you, both of you, you know, how have you envisioned work in the past, and how, if any way, has that changed as you've been on this, your own path of embracing this sacred feminine wisdom and whatever words you would use to describe that? And I guess I'll pitch it to Trista. I'll pitch it to you first.
Okay. Yeah. You know, I got into feminism. I got into a goddess in college. I wanted to be a writer, but my stepmom and sister thought, oh, you'll not make money, blah, blah, blah. She offered to pay for my MBA. I went and did that. I became a mortgage broker for 13 years. And I was, you know, I literally went back to work with my son in his stroller like the day after I gave birth to him.
Wow.
And put all my files under him and went home. And I literally, I mean, this is how naive I was. I was amazed, but I really just thought, oh, I have this baby now and I'll just work next to him and it'll all be fine. And my sister, I ended up with I don't know how long it took, but almost immediately he stepped in as his nanny for the first 2.5 years of his life. And then I plowed through for, you know, a long time like that. And basically what happened for me is I was going through a divorce with my children's father. At the same time, it was 2008. The markets were crashing. There was really not a lot of business to be had. Both of my grandmothers became sick at the same time, and I cared for both of them for weeks until their passing, and then they passed 5 months of each other. But when my first grandmother was at the end, I just realized I cannot do all this. Something has to go. And so I resigned from it. And which I'm so glad I did. I'm so grateful that I had time with my grandmother. So I've taken care of my grandfather 2 or 3 years now. So that was a radical shift for me. And of course, as we all know, there is no money in caretaking, and it's rewarding, but there's, you know, children, elderly, everything. I mean, women's labor is not valued. So I would say probably suffer from that choice. Although, you know, I don't regret it. It's one of the proudest accomplishments of my life. And then I basically just had at least a year where I just sat on my couch going, what am I going to do? And thankfully, at that time, I had some alimony, and at that time, I was getting child support, so I could actually do that. And then I went through certification with Glenn Riley and the Imagine a Woman program, and then I ended up starting Girl God Books kind of on a whim. So for me, it was like I kind of had to slow down because I think I was so tired. I'd been so long. There were years where I was sick more than I was well, but I would still, you know, keep pushing. So But that's kind of the model that we're given as women, especially in corporate America, that you just have to keep up with the guys. And that also means you also have to keep up with all the housework, all the childcare, all the elderly care, everything else, and still look good in your suit. So I'll leave it at that. But that's my background and why I have a strong opinion on how that's probably the opposite of how things should be.
Oh, yeah. And I want to come back. I also want to hear from you, but the thing that sort of stood out, but there's a lot of similarities, I feel like, in my journey. But one of the things that you said was, you slowed down because you had to. And I think that is so, it's a shame, right? That our bodies, we can feel like we're forced to choose this because there's no other way, rather than just being able to see like, this is healthier for me. So I want to come back to that, but Iris, I'd love to hear from you too.
Yeah. I'm not sure I ever fit in with the model of how humans were supposed to be. And I never really followed the outline that we're all handed. And, I've been a poet since I became a woman and an artist and a traveler. So I've always leaned into moving through my life intuitively and with where my enthusiasm leads me. And then, I also had my first child when I was only 20. So, just a baby of an adult. And so motherhood settled me right into moving through time and moving through work in a way that is led by the current need of the moment. And again, the enthusiasm and the creativity. So I've been really blessed to be able to live in that way. And I really feel it supported me as an artist and a musician. And I didn't get that same burden of stress that I'm hearing that you went through, Liz and Trista, in your experiences in the business and corporate world. But I also didn't really get much compensation for the creative endeavors that I've put out there. I've been blessed to be taken care of by my husband while we raise our family. But my ambition has always been more to be true to my creativity than to be successful in the eyes of someone else or in the financial world. So that's a little bit about how I have gone about my journey.
Yeah. And I wonder, Iris, if you would say, and maybe you just described it, but I'm wondering, what does that language mean anything to you? Like to work in a more feminine way? Like, does that mean anything to you? And if so, what does that mean?
Well, I'm not sure if it does. I get a little stuck on the definitions of masculine and feminine. I think that those words are defined very differently by everybody. I think of it as more an organic way and a not organic way. I think there's a natural way that our as humans that we're supposed to be on this earth. And if I was going to say in a feminine way at all, would just be more in tune with nature. And I'm not sure that that's necessarily feminine. And I know for some people it's absolutely considered the feminine, but I just think that nature itself guides us. And a lot of the structures that we're being called to be a part of that feel so challenging and burn us out are ways that aren't in alignment with nature and with nature's time. And in that way, I feel that's what I meant when I said I was guided by motherhood into a more natural and more organic time, because your babies, that's what they require. That's certainly what they require, is for you to be in the moment with them. So that's my experience a little bit more.
Yeah. I'm thinking too of, what Trista said or what I called out about, how she, had to slow down. And it's funny because I've thought of that. That was sort of an earlier part of my journey was, when I had my daughter, I had kind of a similar reckoning. It didn't play out in me leaving my career until later, but I felt like I had to slow down. I couldn't do everything. And I'm thinking of the way you're describing it, Iris, which is you were sort of already out. You know, you weren't bound by these constraints of the traditional business world, where then motherhood was like just a call to align with nature, as opposed to like a smackdown, which I don't know if Trista would call it that.
Yeah, I mean, if I can jump in, I would just say, like, hearing Iris talk just now, and just, you know, from what I know of you, I would say that you, I would say it's not a masculine or feminine way about you. It's an intuitive way. We all have our intuitions, but most of us, I would say, are squashed with that. And so it sounds to me like maybe you didn't have that same squashing that some of us get in the same way. I don't know if you want to comment more on that. But for me, I think that in a very fundamentalist type of a home, that all your needs and your, you know, your intuition and everything that comes, like your deep desires, you learn to squash those down, because you're sex female, you're, everything that you want or need is secondary or flat. What I hear when I hear Iris describe her approach is that she went at it as at a more intuitive level, as opposed to either, you know, masculine or feminine. And an intuitive level that most of us are not able to recognize within ourselves growing up with patriarchal religion, as we're kind of disassociated from that, or at least I was. And I, most fundamentalists that I know actually also experience where, especially if we're born girls, our need secondary or last, whatever male is in there.
So, all right. So I've got a question then around this idea of if we're working more with nature, this makes me think of the Gregorian calendar and also clock time, you know, how we sort of bind our days to the workings of the clock, and we kind of have to, right? Like we have to show up to have this conversation or to plan things out or to host events or whatever it is. And yet I think that those things can really come to dominate our lives. So I don't know. I mean, this is an active thing that I turn over in my head all the time, but I'm wondering, Iris, if you have any thoughts on that, like how do we actually work within clock time without really allowing it to control us? You know?
Yeah, absolutely. It's certainly not easy. I feel like I'm just coming into learning how to be, a little bit better with that kind of structure. Like Trista was saying, you know, she felt so squashed by this, that system of life. I feel like I rejected it from a really young age. And so I wasn't trying to fit into it. And I've just been trying this past decade to get it together a little bit more, to make it easier to share everything that I do with my creative time and all the exciting things that I'm guided towards intuitively, you know, how to share it, to collaborate, and to get things done with people. You really have to fit into these schedules. And I think it's by honoring, really knowing oneself is maybe the best way to do it, you know, to really know oneself and what is too much, and being able to say no and having clear boundaries about that. And then also having the full respect of other people's time and energy to show up when you say you're going to show up. You know, I lived in, actually, I don't want to get into that. but living with the seasons is certainly one way to make it a little easier. I know that when it's summertime and when it is springtime, that I want to be outside and I want to travel and I want to play a lot. And so I try and find a way to book my time that allows for that. And I know that in the fall and in the winter, I'm really a bit more ready to hunker down with my creative energy and be productive in that way. So, you know, aligning with that, understanding those seasons certainly helps me to fit in everything I'm trying to do without getting too burned out.
Yeah. Yeah. Same. I'm also thinking too, I was reflecting as you were speaking and interested, I want to give you a chance to answer that too, but how a part of deconstructing patriarchal thought for me is recognizing that there aren't a lot of hard and fast rules, you know? So if we throw out a question like, how do you work within clock time without allowing it to dominate your life? Like, there's probably not going to be a hard and fast rule. You know, it's like a fluid thing, kind of like what you named, which is, well, you've got to honor your own rhythms. You've got to honor nature's rhythms, but you also have to honor other people's time. And that's going to look different, I would imagine, depending on the day, perhaps.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, when I was younger, I remember in my early 20s, I started discovering, you know, the truth about the calendar a little bit, like the calendar year that is now 12 months at one point was only a 10-month calendar year. July and August were added in as extras and named after Julius and Augustus Caesar. And it really just got me thinking about time. Like, that's quite abstract that humanity could have a 10-month year for really long time and then one day just decide that the year now has 12 months. So it got me thinking about the how artificial that is. It's really quite artificial. And the time that I feel more aligned with, as I said, is the seasons and nature and also the moon. She's very consistent in her erraticness. And that's, you know, reflected in my experiences, in my emotions, and in my body as well. You know, there's certain times in the moon cycle where I'm going to just feel like I need to be a bit more within. And there's other times when I'm ready to be with others. And so being in alignment with that and having an awareness of that also really helps guide me in that balance between natural time and clock time and making it work with other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I love that. Trista, are you back with us?
I hope so. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yeah, I like what you said. I mean, actually, I wrote this book a couple years ago called How to Live Well Despite Capital Patriarchy. And there's one of the early chapters early on was throw out all the damn rules. And I mean, they are completely irrelevant. You do, like, I would live within the structure, but I mean, most of the rules are completely arbitrary. I think you should question what things you actually do and what they get. So I think a lot of us just have all these expectations here, and we don't have time to pause. Do I even really want to do this? Do I really need to do this? And prioritize, because you only have so much time on the earth.
Yes, totally. And you know what I was thinking? I can't remember if this has come up on a podcast or not. I know that I've talked about it with April Miller McMurtry, who was a past guest, but I can't remember if we did it on the show or not. But, you know, to your point about time being arbitrary, she was the one that told me that the Gregorian calendar was adopted for taxes, right? Is that, do you ladies know this? Have you heard this?
It sounds very familiar.
Yeah, I think that that was the whole purpose of it, was to create a consistent schedule for when these emperors could get paid. So how crazy that we are running our lives off of this, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I want to go back to what we were talking about earlier too, about envisioning work in a different way, because I also want to just reflect back to both of you that this process of working on this event together has been really interesting for me. Like, I noticed early on when we would get together and have our planning discussions, there was almost like there was a war going on in my brain where the old me is like, all right, I got to have an agenda and it has got to be good. And we got to have like, and this was before we had even gotten very far down the road, but you know, I've got to have all these like bullet points and all these things where I'm going to check off that we get done. And then there's this other part of me that is very aware that it is this collaborative and creative process. And, you know, I know through writing and whatnot, and I know that you, both of you know that too, that, you know, at least the outset of creativity doesn't really like, it doesn't like rules and checkboxes for me. And so I don't know, I'm curious if either of you have any, you know, and I felt like we settled into a rhythm, but I'm curious if either of you have any reflections on what that experience of collaborating together in this way has been like for you.
Yeah, well, I'll say, Liz, that I love your organizational skills. And I find them to be very complementary to my more free-flowing, creative, intuitive way of being. And, you know, that's exactly what collaboration is. And again, I'll come back to what I said about being a mother. I raised my kids in a collaborative way. If I tried to make a checklist and a schedule and very hard and firm rules, you know, that first doesn't fit my personality, but it didn't fit my children's either. They wanted to understand why. And usually when they did, it really helped us to just move forward and figure it out. Collaborating is really about that. It's about really opening to the people that you're with and how they flow and finding that magic place to flow together.
Yes, I love that. Trista, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, I think you need all of it, because you have to have some structure, and even children do need some structure. Although, yeah, I mean, I was with you as more as time goes by, like with a young mother, I had more open. I think later I was like, okay, I'm not really in charge here. I mean, I am, but I'm not, you know, it's kind of like your kids have their needs and those always take, and also children are, and people. So like with the project like this, you have structure, which you're off, but also at a creative aspect is really important, dealing with creative people and, you know, understanding how to motivate them as well, be involved, be invested in the event.
Yeah. I was just thinking too of the kind of the you know, the saying like, we all need to be on the same page. Like, I don't know. I'm wondering now if it's more like we all need to be speaking the same language or reading from the same book or under the same stars, you know what I mean? As opposed to like, I guess that being on the same page implies like this sort of rigid unity, as opposed to like this flowing collaborative thing that I feel like I'm hearing both of you talk about.
Well, I think also too, I mean, even within feminism, and I think Christianity, is there's not a lot of like room for variations or different opinions. And I think that's unfortunate. Of course we're going to have opinion, and feminism and God of spirituality for that. So I think it's really good to, I don't even know if we need to be on the same book, really. I mean, I think essentially we have the same values and the same vision, but I mean, even going back to the word feminine, it's not my favorite either, but I understand, you know, a lot of people actually, that's what they use to express sacred feminine. I don't think the wording is so important to me. It's more the intent and also kindness, because I can't really collaborate with anyone who's not kind.
Yeah.
And we've all, you know, we've worked in a patriarchal office. I mean, towards the end, I used to just shut my door to my office every day because there was so much harassment. And I mean, it's insane. So to me, the most important virtue is kindness in someone that I work with, because also we all make mistakes, we all have things that come up in our lives. And when it comes down to it, to me, that's the important thing. And I'm not talking about niceness. To me, it's often a mistake, but just being kind and understanding and, you know, going into flow and just realizing, like my husband's favorite expression, he always likes everybody, and he's one of the most loving people that I know. He always says, people are different. If I'm complaining about someone, it's like, people are different. And that's so true. I mean, we are. We're just all different. And we're, you know, I admire that he can find the beauty in everybody.
Yes, absolutely. Well, and I think both of you, from what I know about you and your separate paths too, are really strong collaborators, you know, like you work well with other people. And I'm wondering, I don't know, Iris, just based on what you've said, if you have the comparison of being in sort of that non-collaborative work, but I guess I'm thinking of the events that you produced before and, you know, what that experience was like for you. And if you even have a comparison of what it's like to work together as opposed to in more of that hierarchical way.
Yeah. I've always loved to collaborate. Maybe that's just being a high creative person. I like to be around a lot of other people who are very creative and see what we can make happen. there have been a few times I've entered into more hierarchical situations to make money, and it's never really worked out for me very well. My body starts hurting, my brain starts hurting, and it's just uncomfortable all around. So I've, you know, being a creative person and trying to find any sort of success with that and make things happen, you know, it just really requires that collaboration. And I'd love to offer, Liz, that instead of all on the same page, you know, a phrase that I picked up real strong while I was living in the islands was, you know, we're all in the same boat. And, you know, so being in the same boat requires a shared vision and a shared effort to navigate while dealing with the natural world, whether that be the ocean or the river and whatever that's going on. And so everyone's skills on that boat are useful. It's just finding that shared vision so that people can work together to really navigate where they want to go. And that's what I feel like this process has been between the three of us, is we've had this shared vision and we've just shown up every time with our individual contributions. And I love the organic way that it's moved forward.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I love that idea of, you know, all being in the same boat. That's, yeah, that's a much better, I'm going to use that. That's much better.
Yeah, I love that too. And also, I think it's apt for women. We are all in the same boat. I wish, I'm going off the tangent, but I wish we would stop arguing with each other and figure out ways forward.
Yes. And I think, well, for me, you know, this process of working together on this particular event too, it feels like a way forward. Like, we may not all agree on lots of different things, but we can certainly agree on the importance of honoring the seasons, right? And celebrating and finding reasons to celebrate, even in the midst of really challenging times. Like, that feels like we're in the same boat on that, you know? That's common ground that we can find. I also wanted to talk about, because I feel like this has come up between the three of us a lot, and I feel like it's an important conversation to have more of publicly, which is this idea of the way we value women's work. And we all know that women have been historically underpaid for a really long time. I feel like we've even, you know, alluded to it already here by talking about care, the work of caretakers, the work of mothers. It's not compensated. But I think we also tend to undermine our creative gifts or downplay our contributions. And I think for some women, it's really hard to ask to be recognized, whether that's financially or otherwise, for what they offer. And so I'm wondering if either of you have reflections on if that's shown up in your life and how you deal with that.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting to me about that is, for myself, because I can really only speak for myself, when I am doing the work that is work that I don't want to do, that's expected of me from the systems that I participate in, sometimes, you know, working for someone else, doing what they ask me to, I have no trouble asking to be compensated, expecting to be compensated, and even expecting to be promoted if I really put a big effort in. The challenge comes more from, for me, finding compensation for the work that I would do anyway, the work that comes naturally to me, that I'm enthusiastic about doing and that I want to do. And maybe that's how it is for others as well. That's the work that it's a lot harder for me to ask to get paid for some reason. That's what I've been navigating.
But Iris, I have to say that that's sort of like soul work and your soul. I think that I have the same struggle for doing our service, because that's the work that's most important. And like for me, for instance, back in the orchestra, I made a lot of money. But was my work really important? In my mind, no. It was important to other people because I made money. But in terms of like actually offering value, not really. Anyone can basically be a mortgage broker. I think I did it with more integrity than probably most people. I mean, it became very difficult to work in that industry after like kind of getting to the bottom of it, realizing, okay, really, there's not any true ethical way to be in this business. But it makes me actually upset that especially feminist work and goddess work, is not valued, and we don't pump for their time as a form of. I just feel like so many women have given so much, so little in return. And yeah, of course, they probably would have done it no matter what. I remember where I wrote this, but I just remember going back to Barbara Moore and Monica Shu, that like, yeah, they did so much, but imagine what they could actually. They weren't so financially strict during their life. They were both so talented. And Monica Shu has another managed publisher. It just blows my mind that these women were basically both broke for most of their existence and at the time of their death. And it's like, the Great Cosmic Mother is one of the most important texts of all times in my mind. I just wish we would get kind of work more. Everybody says, oh, life changed for me, blah, blah, blah. But when it comes to actually supporting it, I feel like there's very little support.
I agree. It's just, it's so frustrating, isn't it?
And painful, if I'm honest, it is painful. Because I think we have this collective financial wounding as women. I mean, number one, patriarchy has washed us down. I mean, religion, money, sexuality, those I think are like the biggest areas, like pouncing down on women. But you know, it's very hard to be creative if you don't have any money. I mean, it's almost impossible. If you're broke and you can't figure out how you're going to eat next, very, very rare that you're going to be able to like be able to write a song or a poem or a book. I mean, some few people have it in them, but most people in that situation are just dead tired at the end of the day. And it's such a murder of the spirit, actually. Living in poverty is terrible. I mean, that's where most people in poverty are women. So I think we have to turn this around. We have to find better ways forward for women to not only care for themselves, care for their families, do the work that they love, but, you know, support their work. And I think we can all do better at supporting the work of women.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, just we had a lot of conversations early on about this event we're structuring too. And, you know, there's lots of things that you can go to online and you know, lots of ways that energy exchange is structured. And I think, you guys can correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think for all of us, it felt really important that our performers be paid fairly and be paid what felt right for them, because it's a way of honoring their work. You know, I think about, you know, in certain cultures around the world where there are monks who are supported by their community. And this doesn't, you know, as in terms of the divine feminine, at least here, like, I don't know anywhere where that work is supported in that way, you know, where you can rely on that. So that it feels like doubly important that we honor the contribution of the women that are doing the sacred work.
Yeah. I mean, going back to the foremothers, it's a lot easier to be into the goddess now than it was way back when. So when you think about the kind of sacrifices that those women, they made, I mean, I think the foremothers that Miriam Dexter and Vicki Noble put up, we really need to honor them. It's really important. So I would just encourage everybody listening to buy a book, webinar, support your foremothers. They have sacrificed more than you'll ever want.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I have, oh, sorry, go ahead. Iris, were you going to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to say that, you know, I think there is a lot of support out there. I think there is a lot of people who want, not to overlook the constant ways that women are devalued, but I think that the challenges are in the bigger structure, in, you know, for example, the lack of amplification of these women. You know, people who hear about Vicki Noble, people who hear about the book, The Great Cosmic Mother. I mean, I know myself, I don't hesitate to go buy a book when I'm excited about a book that one of these women has written, or to pay to go to her workshop. It's just that it took me a long time to start discovering that there was even women talking about these things, that there even was a goddess culture, that there even was priestesses of the goddess to learn from. And so I think that's a little bit of where my journey comes with She on the Tip of Her Tongue as well. It's just been about amplifying the voices of the women who are already there in your communities, sharing their gifts. And I wonder how we could, you know, change the greater structure to really allow more of her voice to come through.
Yeah. Well, I know we have to keep collaborating on it, don't we? I mean, I think each of us
in the same boat.
We're all in the same boat. We're all trying to do it in different ways, you know, with your work and Trista's work and my work. So maybe this is an invitation to other women who are listening to the show.
Because we can change so much more when we collaborate.
Yeah.
We just have to come together.
Absolutely. Yeah. Hold that vision.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right. I want to just throw out one last question here for us, which is, you know, why is it important that we take time to celebrate? I know we can all answer that, but I'd love to hear you say why? Because that's ultimately what the three of us have been working on, is this idea of a celebration, you know, which in this day and age, we can think of probably like a million reasons not to celebrate, but you know, why in your mind is it important to just take a moment and celebrate?
You know, the greatest antidote to stresses and frustration and anger and all of the other icky feelings that come up for me is being able to come into a place of gratitude. Gratitude is such a remedy, and there is no celebration without some gratitude, right? Whether you're grateful for the food you're eating or the people you're with or the moment you're celebrating. You know, celebration and gratitude just come hand in hand. And that's such a blessing. I'm so grateful for the opportunity to come into a place that's just intentionally honoring that, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely. Trista, anything you want to add there?
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say we've lost some people the last couple of years, but for me, I hit. And it just made me realize, you know, life is so short, and you know, you don't know what you're going to get. And I know people that died, they're the most healthy people I've ever met. 2 months later, brain tumor. So I think, you know, for me, that experience showed me we have to live every day to the fullest, enjoy our life, but celebration especially. You know, my grandparents were like the happiest people I've ever known, and they were married almost 6 years, happily. A lot of people are married for a long time, but not happily. But that was something that I always picked up from them, is that they always celebrated. They always enjoyed life. Every milestone, every anniversary, everything was a happy celebration. Those are the memories of coming together with community, eating, dancing, singing, whatever it may be for you. But I think it's very professional.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to thank both of you for joining me today. This has been fun. We talk pretty regularly, as you might guess, but this is kind of fun to do it in this in this way.
This has been great. Thanks for having us on, Liz.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
And so, okay, if you want to, you know, she on the tip of her tongue, go to Facebook and find Iris. Also her website. I believe it's cunningandkeening.com. Is that right, Iris?
I actually, since you asked, I'm just changing it right now.
Okay.
I'm switching over, and I've got iris-eve.com.
Iris-eve.com. Okay. I will put that in the show notes. And Trista, is it thegirlgod.com? Tell me your website.
Thegirlgod.com.
Thegirlgod.com. Yes. And of course, we're all over social media too. And hopefully you'll be able to join us for this event. It's going to be fun, happening later this month. So I want to thank, I want to thank all of you guys for listening too, as always. If you like the show, if you have feedback, you can always message me through social media or email me. And if you like the show, feel free to, you know, give it a good review, pass it on to other people.
Yes, please subscribe. Review women's shows and books.
Really, yes, important. It really is. Beyond the fact that it makes me really happy to see your reviews, it really does. There's a whole algorithm game.
It's so rare that people actually do it. And yeah. It really does make a difference.
I know. Yes. Thank you for saying that. Yeah. There's like a whole algorithm game that I don't really get and understand, but I do know that the more reviews you have, the more likely other people are to find what they're looking for. So yeah, if that calls to you, please do so. And until next time, I will talk to you again very soon. Home to Her is hosted by me, Liz Kelly. You can visit me online at hometoher.com, where you can find show notes and other episodes. You can read articles about the sacred feminine, and you'll also find a link to join the Home to Her Facebook group for lots more discussion and exploration of her. You can also follow me on Instagram at Home to Her to keep up to date with the latest episodes. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you back here soon.